Hello everybody, Alex from Marsley's here. In today's episode, we'll have Toby Oliver, CEO and co-founder of Bravo Studio, which is a tool that allows you to prototype using Figma and transform that into full-fledged no-code apps. Toby, I met him in 2017 when he was CTO at Typeform, and I seem to recall that in that conversation at Startup Grind Barcelona, where I hosted him, he mentioned no-code several times in the conversation. So maybe that was sort of a foresight into what was coming in his career, or what was about to unfold in the future of the web development, which we have seen with the explosion of no-code in the recent years. However, the hottest moment for no codes has already passed. It was very, very hot for a couple of years, maybe more in 2018, 19, 20, if you will. It was sort of slowing down in 2020. However, maybe we've seen a correction in the market, no code, and the real substantial projects have stayed there. And just people that are actually pseudo coders or no coders or low coders, if you will, but people that didn't just jump on the cool bandwagon of the no code trend, just like NFTs, Web3, blockchain, and ICOs, and all of these other phases that we go in the market, that basically some of these are technologies with no real substance behind them. We see that the real companies tend to withstand the test of time. And this is the case of Bravo Studio that started off as Codeless Labs. And with Toby in particular, we explore the current state of the art of no code. When is the good time to start replacing parts of no code? The threats, the objections that some investors find when you are building your MVP with no code, particularly regarding intellectual property, security liabilities, dependencies on third-party engines and libraries and services, just like in the case that some of these companies are just relying and piggybacking too much on Zapier, on if this, then that, or even on a lot of Amazon Web Services. We also talk at length about AI. I was starting to fear at the beginning of the conversation that would be derailing the main topic for too long, because we broke the ice speaking about the current state of the things in AI, which is particularly exciting, and how this has got a connection with no code as well. Actually, most of the things that we are seeing right now, or I am seeing as an investor, are companies that are just building on top of things that run on top of other things, but they have little to no code behind them. So just integrations of integrations. So while this is particularly useful at the beginning to prototype fastly, and this is one of the main advantages of no code, it's also inherently complicated to maintain over time, because there are a lot of dependencies, a lot of nuts and bolts that are interconnected, and a million things can break apart. So more likely than not, these kind of companies tend to die by either a full lockdown of one of these platforms whereupon they rely a lot, or death by a thousand cuts, because they've got a lot of microservices just connected, this one, right, on that one, APIs and web services and whatnot, and it all starts bleeding into something much, much bigger of a problem, right? So we discuss AI, we discuss no code, we discuss, of course, technology, we discuss their tech stack and some of the technological fuck-ups that they have had in this company and of Typeform. And always, it's always a pleasure, and always we learn a lot from a seasoned entrepreneur and CTO like Toby. So without further ado, let's jump right into this episode. Welcome, Toby. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Very good. Very good. Nice to talk to you again, Alex.
It's funny, because the last time we touched upon the subject of no code in Life on Mars, it was almost a year ago, well over a year ago. We had BentoCell. Does that name ring a bell?
No, actually, I don't know that one.
He's the guy who created, he was the product guy or growth guy at Product Hunt, if I remember correctly. He spun off a community that was called MakerPad. He eventually sold it to Zapier.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, I interviewed him before he was cool.
Oh, wow. You always do. You always find these people early on, right? It's always interesting to see the people you know. It's quite amazing.
It's maybe because I cannot get to the big names, so I have to resort to this one instead. No, just kidding.
Well, anyways. You get to the big names before they're big, right? So that's the magic anyway.
I spot talent before everybody else. Anyways, let's say that it's funny, because every time I talk to people about no-code, we, even like the believers – even the fundamentalists of no code, end up at a meeting that it's good for a certain period of the lifespan of a company, right? What is the industry like nowadays? We're well past the hype of no code. Why are you guys so bullish still on no code?
I think it's just kind of growing further through the life cycle of an application. You know, so as more functionality comes in, I think to my mind, where the interesting parts of no code are is enabling, it's kind of leveraging that whole kind of API ecosystem, particularly. I mean, I think that's why I find super interesting. I mean, there's lots of ways of building things, but you know, I see that like functionality, like data manipulation functionality, is like a commodity now. It's super easy to do, and you can basically almost find a million different tools to manipulate data and do something, and then connect it to APIs. So, you know, I mean, we saw Zapier a few years ago, you know, really grow like crazy connecting up backend stuff. But, you know, why I see interesting things and really where Bravo's positioned is like basically leveraging that API piece where all these tools have got APIs exposing functionality and then hook it into a UI to actually build a whole application like that. And there's other tools doing similar things to us. There's a company called WeWare based in France that is doing a similar thing. It's focused on, you know, taking a UI and just connect it to API. So I think, I mean, broadly, I think a lot of the sort of, you know, bullishness around no code is coming from the fact that so many tools are opening up their functionality and make it easy to connect them together, which is making it like so many crazy possibilities. I mean, you can see this easy case right now is that ChatGPT API, right? It's about an infinite number of companies building something with ChatGPT based on the API. You know, you don't have to have that whole model running your machine. You just connect up an API and do something with it. And I think that's a great example of where things are moving to now. You know, someone builds something really well. It's like the separation of responsibility, right? You make something really good, and then you provide an API and let people do crazy stuff with it. You know, and people are just hooking things together and making really powerful products that scale just by doing that. And I think there's lots of different no-code tools out there, but there's just an explosion of these different tools all working together and kind of levering each off each other to be able to do more and more powerful things.
It's such a stupid time right now with the explosion of AI, not because of AI in and of itself. It's because the hype creates the moment in which like you could actually build something, give a new interface to ChatGPT, charge twice as much for no real added value other than just a more beautiful interface, something like that. And people would fucking buy into it. Like we're in that moment absolutely. Of stupid hype. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's interesting for me that, I mean, I don't know if it seems to be like every couple of years, there's a huge hype train. Like you know, a couple of years ago, it was like, you know, blockchain and Web3. And so, you know, people kind of jump from one thing to another in terms of hype, but there's always something really interesting behind it. You know, I think, you know, there's a lot of hype around ChatGPT, but it's fundamentally a very powerful tool, right? I mean, if you find, and there's lots of really powerful use cases coming from there. But yeah, I mean, there is, I mean, it's a bit crazy how much, there's so much bubbly frothiness around this now, right? There's so much nonsense where it's the same thing with different colors, you know, five times over. It's just nuts. But having said that, there are some amazing, amazing things coming that people are using this for. And it's just, it's almost the speed of what's going on is, it's almost unheard of. I think ChatGPT was like the fastest growing product ever, 100 million users in like a month or something insane. I mean, it was just incredible. And you can see why with the power of it.
Actually, that one of my favorite sayings is when the tide goes down, you see who's swimming naked, right? And so we've seen with all these hype trends that you mentioned, right? It was like cryptos and blockchains and ICOs and NFTs and metaverse and virtual reality right now, or even no code. So you've seen that after 2 years, you've seen like the capital that, you know, is deployed on these kind of ventures is it goes down to zero, like in the case of an NFT, is like it's irrelevant nowadays. No code was supposed to replace code. Like the hype was so big, probably that was amplified by investors and non-tech savvy people who actually believe that no code would eventually replace all kinds of code, which didn't happen, but it replaced some parts of developing real applications, right? So it's good. To a certain extent, it kind of like stopped halfway and it still delivers. But like NFTs and other ICOs and stuff like that, they went back to 0% to non-existent businesses because they were a fucking scam, right? But I'm pretty sure that AI will be, of course, some of these companies will be swept aside because they don't have real value, but most of them do have because there are real use cases for them. Anyways, back to no-code then. Because it's funny because like back in the day, when no-code was at its, you know, highest point of interest, so to speak, I think it was around the time that you were serving as Typeform's CTO. Is that something that you spearheaded internally in the company? Is that something that was brought up to your attention by the employees as a grassroots movement? How did you come across it?
Well, I mean, no-code is such a fuzzy thing, right? I mean, it can mean so many different things to many people. In many respects, Typeform is quite a big part of no-code. I mean, the ability to create, in fact, one of the early use cases, actually an investor in Typeform, they built an application for a camping holiday, and they basically had the Typeform was they sent to their friends, and it was something that collected who wanted to go, and actually took money, and was like an entire application built entirely in Typeform. So for some use cases, Typeform is a no-code tool, and obviously the power of Typeform comes from the fact that it enables you to make something a form that collects data in a beautiful way, and it's actually hard to make a Typeform look bad. That's kind of the power of the product. It's really well designed. So I think Typeform was kind of early stages of no-code. And so we saw a lot of people using Typeform for things and build stuff around it. And actually, I was there. One of the last things I did at Typeform was to help build the integrations. So launch the whole API piece for Typeform so that we were able to do far more integrations. And really, the integrations drove a lot of the growth. You know, it really helped to kind of do another growth spurt of Typeform beyond the sort of standard viral nature of the product to kind of leverage the relationships with other tools. You know, everything from Google Sheets to Slack to whatever. You know, people wanted to be able to take the data from Typeform and put it somewhere else. And I think that's kind of the thing that where I think no-code really helps is often, you know, you've got these a lot of tools which do certain amount of things, but then you need to make it do something else, right? And in the past, there'll be someone building an application to do that. But with nowadays, you can kind of hook things together to be able to do the exact specific task you want to do. And I think that's where I think no-code has a really strong piece and goes beyond the hype. You know, be able to empower people to kind of do the sort of things like Zapier, but you know, more customized. So you get exactly the workflows that you want. So people get the right information when they need it. And they can then rather than having to buy a hugely expensive tool that is flexible, you can just hook together smaller tools which are powerful to do exactly what you want to do.
Yeah, two of the reasons, that's a really good point. And actually, two of the reasons why I was so bullish on no-code back in the day, even though it's counterintuitive to what we do as a bespoke development agency, right? I was certain that this was going to be a big thing, perhaps bigger than it actually is today. But for two reasons. One of them, it allows you to extend functionality of SaaS, which is by definition non-extendable, right? Back in the day, when you were installing on-premise software, there was always like a plugin. You could always buy extensions. You could always buy, you know, if you remember Winamp back in the day, like I'm talking about Winamp. The Terrace.
Yeah.
Winamp had such a community of plugins and shit. It was amazing. Then we went to like fucking Spotify. It's like, this is the UI and we're going to change it every week. And you're going to have these annoying ads and you're going to have these annoying friends feed that you never asked for, right? And for me, that's the tyranny of SaaS. They're just changing it unilaterally, and you're like, I didn't want this, you know, I'm still paying and I feel fucking stupid because I want to extend it and I cannot, right? Whereas with no code, you can actually extend that. And on the other hand, as a second reason, is because it sort of eliminated the moat of the software industry in which no code allows non-so tech savvy people to build stuff. So we are making the pie larger and they can actually build something to a certain extent technological, right? Say a marketer. We've got a couple of applications at Marspace that we have built using no-code. One of them is we have a community on Slack and we built an auto invite. Typeform, pay with Stripe, you receive an invite link, boom, done. That's one. Yeah. And then we built an ATS, an applicant tracking system, because we didn't feel like paying for an ATS because we just hired 2-3 people a year. And so why do we need to have a software for that? Just craft something together using Zapier, Typeform, and Linear. And that's it. Boom. We have an ATS. Magic, right? So these are my two reasons. What are yours, actually? Because you built a studio on top of it or around no code. So
I mean, really, it's the same kind of principle. I mean, I think the power of no code comes from that kind of approach of hooking things together to get you bespoke functionality that you need. I mean, I just one thing I want to touch on is that, you know, I think no code's not going to take away all the software development. It's just going to mean that basically, you know, the developers are doing the harder things, or they're going to be creating the tools that you hook together. You know, I think, you know, it's much more around, you know, being able to combine powerful sort of components together as a concept rather than building enormous applications. That's where I think no code really wins. So the sort of thing, the applicant tracking system, I mean, exactly right. You know, so many businesses need bespoke workflows in their business. So they want to do something, you know, whether it be an applicant tracking system or a CRM with a very specific set of requirements. You don't need to go and spend a fortune on Salesforce. You can, these days, starting with, Airtable or some similar sort of tool, you can actually create some really, really, really great complex workflows which work really well, much more cheaply, much more custom to how you want, without having to pay a ton of developers, and actually get it done much faster. And I think also the other real benefit from this is, I mean, and this is a classic you know well from software development, often the user rarely knows what they want to start with, right? The number of iterations you have to go through is like, do you really want this feature? Oh, I think I want this feature. But when you get it, you go, actually, I don't want it after all. I want something else, right? And that iterate, you always go through those iterations, right? Every single time. It happens all the time. The great thing about no-code is it means you can iterate really fast. You don't have to go through development cycles, and you can try stuff out as you go along. And maybe, you know, you get to a point where I know exactly what I want now, and I need it to scale. So maybe this is time to develop it. No code is great often for doing their sort of MVPs and doing tests and building things. Sometimes it can go all the way and be the full product. Sometimes it can be the sort of point where you understand what you need faster, so then you can build the full thing properly. So, you know, it gives you a lot more flexibility. And I think the speed of iteration is one of the strongest points, particularly around the Bravo Studio that we build, because you can iterate really, really fast. And then you can learn about exactly what the users want, you want, and get to that point much more quickly.
Let's talk about Bravo Studio, because I think one of the value propositions that you have is you integrate directly with Figma and Adobe XD. I don't know if that's a correct name, but because there are so many no-code platforms out there, right? And most of them are like, you know, drag and drop stuff and just build stuff together. But they revolve around classic templating, and they're difficult to customize the look and feel. So, and at the very end of the day, you still require, like, you want to personalize a little bit more your application so that it doesn't look like a fucking template, right? So you have, when was the moment of realization that you needed to somehow involve the designers there and say, like, look, we think our differentiation is we will let you to build on top of your designs?
So, I mean, I think some of that comes from my Typeform days. I mean, one thing I learned from Typeform is that design and the engagement that comes from good design is a critical part of a good UX. And, you know, the trouble is it's not easy to do it well. And the trouble is, I mean, again, you see this, I'm sure, in your application development, that handoff between designers and developers is like a huge battle, right? It's like designers want this. Yeah, it's painful for everybody. But no one likes it. And there's just huge industries. I mean, Envision was a product built around trying to make this easier. And there's loads of tools to make it easier. Now, Figma has kind of just owned the whole UX sort of design market. It's incredible how close it's grown because it's a great collaboration tool. And so what we did is when we were building Bravo, we thought, you know, look, what is the point of us trying to build another Figma to sort of a half-assed version of Figma that lets people build something when they can just use Figma? And, you know, at the time we were looking at this, Figma had just launched its plugins and some of APIs. So it was easy to integrate with. And it just, we realized that actually it enabled the designers to really just do what they want, get to realize their designs properly and give them the flexibility to change it. And actually this gives us a huge advantage over other sort of similar tools because they're stuck to having their own designers and trying to replicate things. We basically give designers exactly what they want. But the magic is not just the import from Figma. in Bravo, it's actually in sync. So as you make a change to Figma, that's rolled out through the application you have in Bravo almost instantly. So you can kind of do live designing and testing, which is really hard to do on almost any other platform. And so that which kind of comes back to that speed of iteration, be able to give a designer a tool that he can test with against live data in real time, it's pretty crazy. And it means that the people who use this go like, okay, this is a bit of a game changer for me. I can really do all the things I want to do way, way faster than pretty much any other tool in that instance.
So in any case, you still need your designers. So these are still something needed for the process. You still need the developers to code part of it because sometimes the integration requires it. Yeah.
No. I mean, absolutely. And the thing about Bravo is we're just kind of like a Zapier. We just connect designs to APIs. We don't do logic, right? And again, we think that, we kind of take the view that the same way that why build a better version of Figma? Why build a better backend than what you've got in AWS or your Airtable or whatever it is? There's loads of great backends out there. We just want to make it first class citizen to connect to the APIs and let them choose what you want. So the developers focus on the APIs to do logic. The designers focus on the design to do the design. And we just kind of fill in the mobile piece, which connects them together. And that just means that you can kind of have the best of whatever world you want. And more importantly, if you hit a limitation like, oh shit, you know what, this Airtable is a bit rubbish. It doesn't do logic properly. Okay, let's just get someone to build me a proper backend that can scale and connect it to my design again. So you can switch out the back end. And again, that's pretty unusual for a lot of the no-code tools. Many no-code tools kind of trying to trap you into a silo of using everything, the database from them, design tool from them. It doesn't give you a lot of flexibility. And often you hit sort of limitations or cost becomes very prohibitive pretty fast. And you can just chop and change as you like with something like Bravo.
That's very interesting. Another part of the process in which you probably need the developers is when things break. Because we've got these two applications I mentioned, right? And whenever they break, the non-tech savvy people cannot fix them. It's usually a developer has to jump into the problem. So you're not removing them entirely from the equation because you still need them from time to time. And because you are dependent on so many APIs that they change. Maybe not very often, but they do change. The developers are still require,
Absolutely. Absolutely. Often, and it'd be crazy not to. And the other, actually, one of the things that people don't talk enough about in this whole no-code space is security, right? I mean, security is a huge issue, right? And the number of like unauthenticated endpoints that are being used are all over the place. I mean, it's scary. And again, this is why I think, to my mind, the APIs are better than sort of trying to make coding easier, because it's so easy to screw up the actual logic and actually do this. Whereas if we kind of, encase the logic in an authenticated API, then the security becomes much more robust. And I think there's going to be, as no code expands, I think there's going to be a lot more focus on the security importance. And that's where, we need to build these things in a right, scalable, rugged, sort of secure way. And I think it isn't always thought through. There's lots of issues around like giving sort of democratizing coding. And I think it needs to be done in a sensible way where the sort of changes can be made that create horrendous mistakes. And it's the same way as you can have, these are sorts of things, right? People can do an SQL query that is absolutely horrific if you get to any kind of scale, just falls apart because there's no indexing on it properly. I mean, there's like core things that a developer would think about that someone who doesn't have the skill or the tool doesn't necessarily put in place. And, so I think we need to think about how these things work together in a way that scales well and doesn't cause these disastrous issues, whether it's bad coding or security or whatever. It's going to be a problem, I think, as we see more of this sort of no code coming out there. And it's going to be something that needs to be managed well.
Yes, I see your point. But when security is brought up and we are talking about no code, at the same time, your application is exposing your data in many, many third-party libraries, many third-party platforms, right? So integrate with Stripe and Typeform and Zapier and this and that, then you've got multiple points of entry. Right. One of them gets hacked and you probably have got, so you've got like four or five different places that could be hacked, and they are hacked more often than a bespoke application no one cares about. Right. So how do you, what's the argument against this when potential clients come to you saying like, oh, in terms of security, like I'm concerned that, Typeform has been hacked in the past. So,
well, I mean, how do you solve it's that? I think that's. I mean, it's going to be true of almost any SaaS application. I mean, I think you know, most applications these days would use, like, you know, they could be using Auth0 for authentication, they're using Stripe for payments, they're using, could use Airtable to store some data or a content management system to store the content. I mean, they're using multiple tools anyway. I think the challenge is that, you know, we've got to just have some sort of way of managing that, you know, so we don't have an explosion where every bit of data is replicated across 15 different places. And more importantly, that when it is stored, that it's stored in a way that's the communication is secure. So, you know, we're using authentication tokens, and that authentication token, the endpoint is secure against, you know, it's not open to everybody to access. I mean, those are the sorts of things that I think need to be, you know, put in place. And generally, I mean, I think, there's more comfort. I mean, we've gone through the sort of various stages of development, right? You used to have your own servers, then it went to cloud, they went into data warehousing, then the cloud, and now we're putting data in people's SaaS applications. So I think, you know, people are getting more comfortable around that, but it is becoming easier and easier to have big security problems. So, you know, I think, but, you know, most people are using these SaaS tools now anyway, and it's just a case of, say, it's no code is just an extension of that in some respects. It's easier to go crazy with it, I would say. You could have data all over the place. So you need to be manage that in some ways. But I think it's too powerful to ignore. I don't think we should restrict it too much, but we just need to do it in a responsible way.
Yeah, exactly. Probably because some companies will be using these in some departments that are not purely technical. They somehow escape the security guidelines of the company, and that could be a potential threat, right? Say marketing decides to build something on top of your application, and maybe the CTO is not aware of that, and it somehow is exposing part of the, you know, some kind of data that you really don't want to expose. The other reasons why investors are perhaps like not trusting no-code applications that much is IP, right? At the very end of the day, most companies built on top of no code will not have a particular IP because they're just piggybacking on top of four or five different services, and they don't have like real algorithms or like a real backend, right, for them. So is that something that you see your clients are worried about, or how do they all overcome this objection?
To be honest, it's the same sort of argument, right? I mean, you're already using lots of backends and tools that you know, whether you're using Stripe, whether you're using, you know, I mean, it's already there. I mean, no code is just the next step in some respects. It's not that different than you know, many people are putting data in Airtable, leveraging that, putting stuff in Typeform. The data's in Typeform. You know, it's already happening. So I think the core of it, I mean, so I haven't seen a lot of investors worried about it too much. In fact, in some respects, they welcome no code at the right stages. I think it's all about where you are in the process. No code is great at the sort of early stages to help you move faster, you know, to basically fill in gaps where you don't have expertise. Obviously, as you progress, you want to build some sort of your own IP, and then it makes sense to have some parts of it bespoke so that you have something that's unique to you and not necessarily copied. But, you know, I think it's all about, you know, where you are in the sort of development cycle and what's appropriate for your, so it's part of the core of your business. I mean, who cares if marketing are using no code tools to build some sort of automation flows? Because if it's not core, you know, if it's not core to the business, that they might be the fastest way of them moving, and it makes sense. If it's core to your business, then maybe it makes sense to kind of bring it in house.
Okay, yeah, that's a good point. That's where I wanted to actually go. Is how do you, like, what is your advice to actually so gradually replace the no code as you progress, and it makes sense that, you know, you take this bar and you internalize it, you build it actually as a like a
full-blown
backend.
Yeah, well, I guess it really depends on where you're hitting limitations. I mean, there have been many businesses now that have raised a lot of money built on Bubble. And, you know, If it's, and we've got customers who've got most of their, the core of their business built on Bravo Studio, you know, because we can enable them to have in-app purchasing, and they're mostly a content company. They're not really a technology company, but they needed a platform to be able to monetize their content. So, you know, I think it really depends on what the business is. If you're a technology company, then you probably need to have something that's bespoke to you, right? Because, you know, that's what you are. But, you know, there is an argument to say that with the complexity that some no-code tools can bring, that way that it's put together has its own intellectual property, you know, and there may be something clever about how you do that or some unique way that provides that. And I think we'll probably see that more. But at this point in time, I think that's unusual. I think generally for a technology company, you want to be building some core part of your system that is, you know, bespoke to you and that you know really well, because you need to optimize it. You need to make it your own. But, you know, for a lot of other companies that aren't necessarily technology companies, no code is a phenomenal way of actually getting huge leverage. You know, the part of what we do in Bravo is really enable people to create a sort of a mobile channel. Mobile development, I'm sure, Alex, you know really well, right? It's super pain in the ass, right? So hard. It's the worst. It's one of the worst things to build for, because you've got to kind of play the Apple games, getting stuff in the App Store. You've got to constantly make sure the library is up to date. And it's really expensive. And, you know, so a lot of web companies have just avoided. When I was at Typeform, they don't have an actual native app for Typeform results. So, you know, because it was just too much of a diversion. And so, you know, what we provide at Bravo is the ability to have a whole new sort of channel of acquisition and also functionality for the users, for something they couldn't do before. So I think no code is an enabler, really, for a lot of respects, giving you more functionality capability with the same team.
And another case, or another use case in which I think it comes in really handy is when you are a non-technical person, your company is non-technical, and you will never find a technical co-founder or a technical team because nobody wants to join that, right? See, usually some e-commerces are built on top of Shopify and they're not interesting for developers, and you think you need developers, no, to build your internal tools. It's like, no, dude, just learn no code and just connect the shit out of everything and just, but you will never, it's very rare that you will find a developer who wants to join to kind of like, you know, help you to update your Shopify and whatnot or Magento or whatever platform, or your company is not technical. You have a shoes factory or something like that. And you think you need a developer, maybe not anymore. So I think in this situation, it comes in really handy. You wanted to say something with regards to
that. I was just going to completely agree with you. I think that's really where I think no-code has a huge advantage in helping traditional companies become a lot more efficient with some of these sorts of tooling, because they can be built by people or that sort of, that functionality be brought in-house. You know, being able to have a bespoke application that can help them with some of their production workflows, that's really powerful. And, you know, as you say, it would have been hugely expensive to build before, but certain things can be done now to help efficiency without having to, well, really fast, without a lot of resource. So yes, I agree. Good point.
Let's nerd out a little bit about the tech stack. Right? What is your tech stack and the company? What technologies have you used to build Bravo Studio?
I mean, it's fairly standard. So our web front end is like Next.js, the TypeScript. Then the back end is Postgres database, TypeScript again. And we have the way it works is that we basically translate the design that comes in from Figma to like an internal format. And what happens is that gets sent to the mobile device. And then we have like a native kernel. So it's in Swift on iOS and Kotlin on Android. And it effectively executes the design. And then it pulls in API request to kind of make the design dynamic. So the design will change based in what the APIs do. So effectively, there's not really much logic in terms of what we have on the application, or logic as we push to the back end, which again gives you a lot of flexibility, but it means that you have to think about things slightly differently to build a depending on what you're trying to do. But it's nothing super complicated, but the hard thing is kind of translating those Figma files into sort of applications. That's where I think a lot of our magic comes from.
Yeah, because one of the biggest lies that was out there for a while was if you learn React, you can build stuff with React Native. And then boom, magic, you've got your mobile application. Turns out it's not real, right? Then you've got that 5%, that 10% that you need to be closer to the phone OS. And you have to learn, you have to tinker with Swift, you have to tinker with Objective-C, you have to tinker with this, and or same with Android, right? If you really want to go the extra mile and have that native feel, not only the look and feel, but also like the sensations of that. So at the very end of the day, you need also native developers, native mobile developers in the company. So by using your platform, your users, your customers are avoiding this part of building a team, right?
Yeah. I mean, basically, I mean, you're absolutely right. React Native, I mean, I think there are some companies using it successfully, but certainly I know that I think Airbnb canned its React Native project because exactly that issue. They spent so much time finishing off that last 5%. They pretty much had an Android or Swift build anyway. So it's like, well, what's the point of this? Let's just do it native and we're done with it. And so, yeah, what we try and do with Bravo, with the whole purpose of this, is you just avoid the whole mobile development piece. You can have your backend developers building your APIs or whatever functionality you need, or no-code ones if you need it, to do your logic, but you don't have to have mobile developers. You know, from Bravo, from your design in Figma, you click a button and, you know, we'll give you a build that you can put into the App Store. So yeah, you don't have to worry. You don't have to worry about even building, which is again is a bit of a pain in the ass as well.
I like the whole process. One of the things I liked is the end-to-end process of building the application. So you connect your Figma design, then you can like rearrange stuff, connect your backend, and then it helps you actually with the publishing, which I think is something very painful because that's where, as an agency, one of the things that usually there's a lot of friction between the customer and ourselves as an agency is customer is non-tech savvy most of the times, and they don't know how to publish. But definitely they have to be the ones publishing it, because if the agency publishes, then it's kind of like the IP rights. If you don't get an understanding, there's going to be a lock-in, and we don't want that. We want the client to always, like at Marspace, it's like the client publishes it. But most of the times they don't know how to do it. It's it creates a lot of back and forth. They don't have the credentials. It's like, oh, I didn't know how to manage this. Then usually they forget about it. And when Apple comes with a request, they forget about it. And we don't see it. And we are not able to respond in time. Therefore, we have to start from scratch. So if you're able to manage this from the application, I think that's a very, very good solution. That provides a lot of value and differentiation.
To be fair, I mean, we can't do all of it. I mean, we try and make it as close to possible. I mean, there's, as you say, it's difficult that Apple and Google want the actual owner of the app to create the certificates and things. And I mean, we've tried to simplify as much as we can, but it's hard to do that without kind of breaking the rules, you know, because you don't want to be the user giving you your password and username for that. So there's things we can do. I mean, certainly signing it and providing the bundle is basic as far as we go. But that last piece, they do have to put it up. But the key thing is once they've got the certificate set up and they've got this process set up, it's really easy to do updates. But that is a pain point. And I think that's another reason why people struggle with app development, right? It's just, there's lots of, you know, the checking and checks that both Google and Apple do just make the whole thing way more complicated than just throwing a website out there and putting a URL on it, right? It's a different game.
Do you think the mobile, like native mobile development frameworks and languages have actually consolidated into something that is not going to change for the next 10 years? Because at the very beginning, it was kind of like ebbing and flowing, right? Android was pretty consistent with Java, but then until Kotlin came around, with iOS, it's been a clusterfuck of a few different languages, but it seems like, you know, Swift is there, but still some other languages are lingering around. But it seems like it's standardized a little bit. Like, do you think it's stable now? Or
I mean, you've got Flutter coming in now. Flutter, it's sort of providing another platform agnostic kind of approach. So that's getting quite a lot of traction. A lot of people are liking that. I think there's some more things coming from Google as well. Fuchsia, I think, is also floating around. There's a few things that are kind of coming through. So I don't think that the thing that's mobile moves really fast. And there are so many goddamn users on it. I mean, you know, one thing that often people forget is that although the web is the default for most people in the Western world and lots of other parts of the world, mobile is actually the primary way of actually communicating. And so, you know, it's only going to increase in importance, the mobile pieces. So I think we're still going to continue to have new ways of dealing with it. The thing I think is going to be a challenge going forward is I think the stranglehold that Google and Apple have it's going to be hard to see that staying the way it is forever. I think that's going to, it's going to be difficult. Well, I mean, like, you know, Apple basically, I think there's court cases going on right now where Apple is trying to protect having its own a single app store. Right. And, you know, when you start having open up app stores, then you lose control of the app development process. You know, there's lots of things that they hold very close. I mean, in Google, there are several app stores, right? Alongside the Google App Store, you've got the Amazon App Store. Then I think there's a number of sort of third party app stores you can install as well. So you can, on an Android phone, actually have several different ways of getting apps in. And in a different app store, there isn't the same app sort of a checking process. Whereas Apple, there is only one, unless you've jailbroken your phone. And so, you know, I think it may be that Apple will have to allow other apps to develop. And I think that will change things a lot. But I mean, it's always interesting, you know, most people don't realize that although there are way more Android devices out there, most developers want to develop for Apple because those users pay more. Right. So they're the users you really want to get. And it's a much simpler ecosystem. You don't have to develop for like 50,000 different form factors that you have with Android. It's a really complicated ecosystem to worry about. But I think my feeling is that it's only going to increase in size. And I think we'll probably see different ways of getting apps in there, which will obviously make it different again. But it's a super interesting area for sure. And it's still the thing that always I find surprising is how hard it is to actually get, you know, apps out there. You know, although it's such an important large market, it's not a straightforward exercise.
And one of the things I see, I'm like, I'm bullish again on no-code because I'm seeing a strong comeback with the rise of AI, right? Now everybody is like, oh, I want to build something with AI. I want to do it fast because right now it's so hot. But they don't have either the technical chops to build something around it, or they don't have the time. And they're like, fuck it, I'm just going to go no code and connect with APIs because most of them, they have already APIs and they are easy to plug into, right? So do you think this is going to be something that it's going to propel your business way forward? Are you prepared for that, a new combat?
I don't know. I mean, it's so much froth around AI. I mean, I'm sure there'll be more attention for APIs and sort of no code. Whether or not it turn into something solid going forward, that's the thing that it's not clear. I mean, I think it will definitely raise awareness of what no code can do. And I think for my mind, the API approach is the really interesting one. That's where we encapsulate things properly, right? That's where you kind of decouple things cleanly, have a nice interface. You don't necessarily care about how it works, but you just want to know, but give me the function. And I think that's just AI is a great use case for that. So I think it'll have an impact on us. Whether or how what the impact will be long term, that's a little bit up in the air still. But certainly we'll try and leverage it while we can. Right, extra awareness is always helpful, and try and build some things to show off. You know what's possible because it is amazing what you can build fast nowadays. It's pretty crazy.
It is crazy, and you know we're building I don't know if it will be out by the time we publish this podcast, but fuck it. You get the exclusive here. We are building an aggregator side of AI projects because there's too much going on, but it's difficult to know, like, to have them in some sort of visual landscape and, like, just a website and all of that. And but it's funny, like, every day I'm just saving tons of new projects and I'm not aggregating them fast enough in our fucking CMS. So it's crazy. Like, I don't know, maybe I should automate the shit out of it, but
You should get an AI to kind of look for the AI things, right? Have some sort of inception, AI inception going on that kind of looks for itself.
And with no code, we can just
with no code.
Because right now I'm just like typing it, everything I'm just typing manually. But I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to build a fucking Google form or a Typeform integration, Google Sheets, and then build it into the fucking CMS, and boom, that's it. It just appears automatically. So that's one of the things. It's a natural evolution.
I mean, it's really interesting. I think, you know, Peter Levels, the Levels guy, I mean, his first version of Nomad List was basically just Google Sheets. It was a Google Sheet, right? It was saying, hey, let me know what you think about these places. And you know, I mean, and again, Google Sheets is one of the classic no-code tools, right? I mean, effectively, you can get by just sharing and having it openly available. You don't need to build anything. Just use a Google Sheet. You know, okay, it's not pretty, but it does the job, right? For the first version, it's super. For this concept of getting people to do MVPs and like things you're not proud of, but at work and get the functionality done. why do you need to build anything? Just, you know, just get stuff done. And no code kind of makes it, helps you make it prettier and actually more functional. But I mean, the thing that I think sort of underlying all this is the tooling available today is just insane. If you think back 10 years, right, imagine saying to people, hey, you know what, I can have something like Airtable, like a fully scalable data, well, reasonably scalable database that you can have and share with. People go, well, that's crazy. You know, it's like, why would you give away that for free? It's just crazy. And with AI things, it's just accelerating, right? There are more and more powerful tools that you can do amazing things with really fast.
So we're coming to the end of the chat. There's one signature question in this podcast, which is, what has been your biggest technological fuck up and how much did it cost to the company? It's got to be yours. And don't give me bullshit like I hired the wrong person. Because everybody goes for the easy route.
What is
something
biggest...
like something you broke, like some line of code, some deployed,
or I deleted,
or you deleted, wiping out the database in production, setting your office on fire. We've had those already.
I can't think off the head. I mean, there was one thing when I was CTO at Typeform. We did have a situation whereby, we had a whole bunch of data. Well, we thought a bunch of data had been deleted, and there was a mass panic to think, how are we going to recover this and try to get the backups? And apparently the backups weren't working, so it was all a big disaster. But then, I mean, it's kind of a cheat, this one, because actually what we found was that the process actually hadn't deleted it. We miscalculated the number of rows that was missing, and actually it was all fine. But I guess the fuck up was that I didn't realize this in the first place. So there's a huge panic for a day where everyone's going, oh my God, what are we going to do? How are we going to tell the users that we've lost the data? But actually it wasn't really gone at all. It was actually fine. It was all like a big fuss over nothing. So it's not really a good one, I suppose. And if I want something that's actually like super bad, I can't.
Have you been coding at Bravo Studio? Are we going to find your lines of code? Is it something that you're like, I'm going to go code? And
you know, one of the things I found is that actually having someone in a sort of management position coding is really a dangerous thing to have, because, you know, often you get pulled into all sorts of crap and then you become a blocker for a bunch of the team. So I tend to do stuff around the edges. I tend to like build use cases and like help users and do things and try new stuff out that's not necessarily core, but helps to kind of move things forward, because I don't want to get in the way of people. So, you know, I mean, well, plus the fact I'm not as good as they are as well. So they're better than me. So it's better I let the good people do the work.
Okay, last one. Couple minutes for you to share how we can help you. And, you know, very grateful for what you shared today. We had a lot of fun. We learned a ton. How can we help you in Bravo Studio?
I mean, I think the key thing for me is to get people to try out Bravo. You know, build things with it, try it out. You know, if you ever need to do anything on mobile, it's actually a really powerful tool. And people often think, a lot of people kind of come to Bravo thinking, this is just a, you know, MVP thing. But we have a lot of people building stuff in production with large numbers of users because it scales really well. It scales as much as your backend does. So really it's, and I think the approach of connecting to Figma is a surprisingly powerful one that people don't really realize. I would just say, use Bravo, tell people about Bravo, get the word out, because it's a really powerful way of approaching development. And I think the ability to give you that design flexibility cannot be understated for something you really want to engage with your users. So it's something that I think everyone should use it more, basically.
Any parting words with regards to no code?
Look, I think the one thing I would say about no code is that it isn't going to take away coding from everybody. I think it's an enabler for a lot more people. I think it's more about democratizing development and allowing more people to be able to leverage the tools that are out there. That's the way I see it. I don't see it as a way of taking complex things away. It's about letting more people do things that help them. That's the way I look at it. And I think that's the thing, message I want to get to people, is that it isn't like the solving of all problem and just make coding stop. It's more about making this technology available to more people. That's where I think where the power comes from.
Thank you very much.
Great stuff. Thanks, Alex. Nice to talk to you again.